I think it's fair to say my next guest is a recycling science revolutionary. She's been leading the charge to close the loop on waste for years. Professor Veena Sarjawala established the world-class Centre for Sustainable Materials Research and Technology at the University of New South Wales. And for many years now in her lab, she's been giving new life to things that often end up in landfill. To Veena, waste is a renewable resource, and she proves it at the microfactories she's been working on at her university, focusing on green and e-waste and turning it into all sorts of stuff. Earlier this year, she became the director of the Circular Economy Innovation Network. So I thought, you know what, after listening to the Prime Minister over the weekend, who better to ask about what is available right now to close the gap on waste and use it over and over? So what does go into your recycling bin can be processed right here in Australia and used for something. Professor Sarjawala, I know you've had a crazy busy day. I really appreciate you coming in tonight.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris.
It's nice to have you back. You must have been happy when you heard the Prime Minister on the weekend.
Absolutely. It was amazing to kind of listen to all of this happening. And I think in a way, you know, that sense of pride, but also that sense of, yes, we can now get on and do this stuff in Australia. And I think to me, it's really nice to be able to hear the Prime Minister make that announcement.
Yeah, if I was you, I would have been jumping up and down in front of the telly going, hello.
That's it. We're here and ready to go.
So, okay, of what goes into our recycling bins now, just can you give us an idea of what can be done with it? What are the possibilities? What technology exists now to work with that?
Yeah, no, look, I mean, there are obviously standard technologies where you can convert, for example, a plastic bottle into another plastic bottle, for instance. And that's standard technology that, you know, you can actually implement straight away. But in addition to that, we also have to recognize that sometimes you've got plastics that are rather difficult plastics. They're not in a traditional sense to be able to convert into the same product again. In that sense, we've got to look at the possibilities. So, for example, in our electronic waste, and you've got a lot of good quality plastics, like in our printers, for instance. So you can imagine that, you know, if you've got good quality plastic, you really should be looking at the possibility of making that into a product that's fit for manufacturing. And I think that's really where we're developing microfactories that allow us to take a lot of these rather what people might think are difficult plastics, but we are not just recycling it in a traditional sense, but we're actually reforming it into new products. And in some instances, there could well be products that could be diverted into making metals, for instance.
So it's not really recycling, it's rebirthing by the sounds of things.
That's exactly right. And that's what we like to actually call that the fourth R, going beyond reduce, reuse, recycle, and saying when you have to go beyond recycling and you need the fourth R, which is really about reform. So you're absolutely right. This is about thinking about these materials, not just from a macro point of view, that I'm looking at something that looks like a bottle or looks like a printer, but rather looking at it from a micro point of view and saying, you know, what are the molecules that are present in there? And can I actually preserve those molecules and rebirth them, to quote you over and over again? So I think to me, if we can actually do that, bring these materials back to life in different forms again and again, we effectively then extend their lives in our economy, in our productive economy. And that's where circular economy comes in, so that we are enabling our materials to be reformed into many different shapes, different needs. And that's really the point. Society's needs might change. The materials and the way we use them might change. So we should be looking at not just a bottle as if it is just a plastic bottle or just a printer of a certain type, but rather looking at those fundamental molecules and saying, if I could reform it, fit for other applications, then I would essentially keep it in my economy. So it is about making products fit for purpose.
It's one thing for you to do it in your microfactories at the University of New South Wales. It's another thing to do it on a commercial scale. Are we far away from being able to do that?
Not at all. So, in fact, interestingly, this is where we've been spending a fair bit of time working with our industry partners, including where we were today, is to be able to really work with them in taking that IP and that technology into translation, into the real world domain, and to be able to work with our industry partners so they can actually see that this is something that can be done. This is something that they're interested in. And importantly, they can see the journey of commercialization. So we are not that far away if you actually think about the fact that the science is there. We've been developing the science in our labs. You're absolutely right. We've been running these microfactories in our labs. But now this next step where we're at is bringing together a whole new supply chain where someone who might be processing plastics is suddenly looking at the opportunity to take that into a manufacturing sector. And in fact, working with a manufacturer with whom they would have otherwise not had any contact with. So we're creating these new innovative pathways to take waste from one company and really look at it as a valuable resource for really the next manufacturer to take it on board and manufacture a value-added product.
Apart from plastics, what else? What are the other possibilities for rebirthing?
Well, we are actually looking at materials like waste glass. So, one exciting product that we are developing is where we've combined waste glass with waste textiles. So the exciting thing in a product like this is that usually when people look at these beautiful tiles that we've made for different building applications, the beautiful colors that come out of that is coming out of waste textiles. Now, we know what a big problem that is. So you can imagine that somewhere in this equation, we're bringing in glass and textiles, but also equally importantly, bringing in, you know, organizations, charity organizations like Winnie's and Salvo's, who can then suddenly become part of a supply chain where waste textiles is no longer seen as a problem, but in fact is an opportunity to create a high-value tile, for instance, and a tile that looks beautiful that can be used in various building applications.
So does the tile take on the colour of the clothing?
Yes, indeed. So this is where it becomes absolutely beautiful. And I think to me, the nicest reaction we get from people when they walk into our labs and at the Smart Centre at UNSW is they look at it, they pick it up and they love the look and the feel. And it's almost the sense of, you know, that beauty combined with the functionality that you can see in a tile like that, where you're absolutely spot on, where the colours come through and you can see the blues and the pinks and the beautiful colours. But the nice thing is the glass that is in there with the technology. We've actually used the properties of glass, used the fact that it can become a really strong product. So the tile can actually be really strong and functional. So it has kind of lifted, you know, glass has allowed textile to bring its beauty out, but textile on its own couldn't do this job. So in combination with glass, it's actually now come out as a beautiful product. So to me, you've got a hybrid where you've got waste glass and waste textiles, both of them enhancing each other, and suddenly the two waste materials are no longer waste.
No, they're building products.
They are building products,
and quite
absolutely.
An attractive one by the sounds of things.
They are indeed.
Which is great because clothing is one of the biggest polluting sectors, isn't it?
Oh, look, absolutely. And I think to me that's the saddest part, that we all need to recognise that in many instances, and more than half of a lot of our textiles are in fact synthetic materials. So when we think about polyesters and so on, these are synthetic polymers. So we need to start to appreciate the fact that even though our clothes may no longer be fit for purpose, as in they can't be worn if they have been, you know, worn out, but actually the basic elements in there, the fibers, for instance, they are still very useful. They still have their qualities. So by enabling it to be combined with, you know, something like glass, we've actually enabled suddenly this whole sector of clothes to not just be seen as a burden to our environment. And of course, a lot of it, as we know, does end up in landfill. But we can indeed bring that back into the supply chain. And we can bring in then new players into the supply chain. Imagine Winnie's and Salvo's being part of this conversation where they could, in fact, be creating in partnerships with other companies a beautiful product, which I think is the best outcome for everyone. Good for the environment and ultimately good for the economy if you can start to bring in some of these environmental, points of discussion into our thinking.
You're listening to Professor Veena Sarjwala. She's running the Centre for Sustainable Materials Research and Technology at the University of New South Wales and is also the director of the Circular Economy Innovation Network. We're having a bit of a chat about, you know, what the recycling and rebirthing possibilities are for our waste off the back of what the Prime Minister had to say about it over the weekend. I've got a text in for you, Professor Murray in Newcastle. While we're talking about the environmental impact of this. He wants to know how much pollution is created by reheating and reforming plastic products. Does that in and of itself have an environmental impact?
Yeah, now look, and this is exactly why when we are developing microfactories, our science is built on the foundation that we need to understand that we're going to recycle and reform these materials without causing pollution. So that's really got to be the fundamental foundation here. It's got to be good for the environment. It cannot cause harm. So we have to allow our processes and the way we process these materials in a way that is safe. And I think that's ultimately the most critical element here. Yes, we have to have solutions, but it's no point having a solution that then causes more harm. So it is critical that when we do our research is we keep in mind all of the elements. That's why it's got to be a holistic solution. It's got to deliver the outcomes from a product point of view, but it's also got to deliver the outcomes from a manufacturing perspective. We have regulations, and there is a good reason why we have regulations in the country. So we've got to be mindful of how we're going to carry out our processes so we understand that the best science that we develop has to ultimately meet the requirements in a practical sense.
Are we geared up yet to process all of our waste here in Australia, to not send it offshore?
I think with the science that is there in the country, I mean, if you think about, you know, all of the wonderful researchers across the country who are doing, you know, fabulous work, I think to me, if the science is there, then I think the next phase, which we're talking about here, is really the translation.
Is there a commercial appetite for it? Because it seems to me that we've had an endless stream of eminent scientists like yourself on the program. I know you've come on before and we've talked about these innovations that you're coming up with. But the thing is, it's great. The work that you are doing is groundbreaking, amazing, but then you have to get commercial support for it. Is there much appetite for it?
Yeah, look, absolutely. And which is why, you know, the Prime Minister's announcement on Friday is it is really absolutely critical for us as a country. We need to establish, you know, what are our core values as a society? If we decide as a country that this is an important issue, as the Prime Minister has explained, then we all agree that this is the right thing for us to do as a country. So I think to me, it's also about, you know, aligning our values that we don't want to pollute our environment, but we also want to then keep that goal in mind and then bring together other stakeholders. So we do want then businesses to come on board and collaborate. And I think absolutely there are some businesses who are already working with us who, you know, you have to give credit to that these guys have been a part of that research journey. And sometimes when you jump on this research journey, it's never an easy path. But the fact that there are businesses, and now, of course, off the back of the Prime Minister's, you know, announcement, who are going to be super excited to see the fact that, you know, the science that they really have been keen to be involved in is now going to come to life and is going to be deployed sooner rather than later. And I think to me, that's the matter of urgency that we've all recognized. We need to do something about our plastic pollution. So I think everyone recognizes that. Therefore, our ability to bring all the stakeholders together and our Circular Economy Innovation Network does exactly that. We want to work with businesses, with our local governments and communities and researchers so we can all collaborate. And I think, you know, we can say that not all solutions have to be exactly the same. You might deploy different types of solutions. You know, you might want to make a building product, or you might want to make, you know, printer filaments, for instance, as we're doing at the moment for 3D printing. So you might want to make different products. And depending on, you know, the supply chains and the businesses and the needs of society, you can actually be quite agile in the way you think about, you know, small operations that can be deployed at a local level. So I think in a way, the game-changing opportunity here is upon us to see this as a real positive for the country.
Carl's called in from Westleigh. Good evening to you, Carl.
How are you both?
Well, thank you. What are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking that this is only half the solution, and I really applaud what they're doing at Uni of New South Wales. But it seems to me that there are materials that could be substituted. So, for example, I get annoyed with polystyrene packing and polystyrene peanuts, the packing little peanuts they use, when they could be made out of starch and that could easily be recycled. And all that takes is political will to force manufacturers to use these other products, and that would be half the battle.
Look, absolutely, Carl. And I think to me, you know, again, you've hit the nail on the head there. You know, I think I'm always impressed when, you know, people in the community say things that are so obvious. We have to look at, in some instances, eliminating the products that we actually know are problematic materials. So if we know that some materials are going to be difficult to be dealt with at the end of their lives, then we need to actually ask the questions, are there better alternatives? So I absolutely agree with you that it is about being smart in the way we look at our materials supplies and those supply chains. So, you know, everyone in that supply chain should be actually asking, look, hang on, is there a better alternative? And of course, at the end of its life, you know, we should be able to return those materials back to whoever supplied you that material. So extended producer responsibility, you know, being able to go back and talk to producers and say, now, look, you know, are you happy to take some of these resources back? So I think all of this, you know, discussion where if we can all be part of that conversation and if we can all be asking those questions, I think it's going to be really important that we have all of these conversations. Yes, it is as much about reduce, reuse, recycle, and ultimately reform. But, you know, the simple conversations we should be talking about better alternatives for our materials is so critical.
Carl, thank you very much for the call. Is it a matter of cost here? I mean, will we be able to reach critical mass with this when the cost of, say, something to put in packing that's not polystyrene and that's environmentally friendly equals the cost of the polystyrene packing, which is probably a cheaper alternative right now?
Yeah, well, look, I think, I mean, if we are starting to sort of talk about costs, then we have to take into account the real costs, which is saying that this material actually has a cost of disposal. And I think to me, that's that whole of value chain. So it's not just about what am I paying to get this material, but it's also important to then recognize that disposal is not a free thing. Mm. It has a cost associated with it. So I think when we can start to attribute, you know, all of these real costs with it, because ultimately putting waste away into landfill is not for free. So why should anybody want to put something away into landfill if you can avoid it? So ideally, what you would like to be able to do is find somebody else in that supply chain who can take some of these materials and incorporate that as part of their, you know, manufacturing. So for example, you know, we're working with a company right here in Sydney, and they're absolutely fabulous, excited about the potential of using, you know, potentially these recycled plastic filaments that we are generating in our microfactory. And using that to design and produce spectacle frames. So you can imagine that, you know, we might have a whole range of designers and producers who might look at the ability to make consumer products. And if you could be actually setting up a small micro factory somewhere in a remote community, you could be taking your own plastic waste and in fact, churning out products that your communities need. So I think it's meeting needs of your communities at the same time, which is a positive.
You're listening to Professor Veena Sajwala. She's heading up the Centre for Sustainable Materials Research and Technology at the University of New South Wales, among the many, many other hats that she wears. Are you feeling encouraged by what's happening in this space? Are you seeing a change? You've been working in it for so many years.
I am so thrilled and so delighted, you know, because, I mean, you're absolutely right, Chris. You know, when you work away and you know, of course, everyone in the Smart Centre, you know, my students and staff, and we've had a fabulous, you know, privilege to work with incredibly bright people and our researchers and our industry partners. And sometimes, of course, you do sort of wish, you know, am I sort of working in my own little sort of, you know, bubble in a silo, or is the rest of the world going to kind of one day start to see the value in this work? And I think, you know, in a way, that Friday moment when I did hear the Prime Minister's announcement, you know, gave me goosebumps, because it was like, oh my gosh, this is so incredible to hear. And I think to me, the community sentiments have been there. I've been traveling through the state in my role as the director of the NSW Circular Network. And I think, you know, whether we've been traveling to Gosford or Armidale, it's just the excitement and the passion, whether it's a small business or community members who want to play a part. And I think when you sort of see that sentiment on the ground, when everyone wants to sort of come in and be a part of that conversation and really kind of talk to you about what more could they do. And I think when people ask you that, you go, I could be having this conversation with everyone forever because I want to be able to see more and more of this being taken up at the grassroots level.
Well, speaking of grassroots, Warwick's called in from Carra with a bit of a question for you. I'm not sure whether you can help, but we'll see. Warwick? Yeah. You won the quiz earlier tonight, didn't you, Warwick?
Yeah, that's right.
Fantastic. And we've got you back. So what did you want to ask Professor Sashwala?
Look, this is where it really hits the rubber hits the road for me. I try and recycle as much as I can. And so I run a mechanical repairs workshop. And one of my big beefs is the amount of plastic getting into the environment. And so I've been recycling the used oil bottles. So, the 5-litre oil bottles, and so I drain every skerrick of oil out of them and been putting them into the recycling. And then I was horrified about 2 weeks ago. There was a report on the ABC where one of the reasons why the Chinese had been rejecting our recyclable products that we'd been sending over there was because of the rubbish and the undesirable stuff that was being included in it. And one of the things that they talked about was used oil bottles.
Yeah, I know. It must be disheartening, Warwick, because, you know, on one hand, you know, when we hear about these stories, you sort of feel a bit disheartened because you think, well, wait a minute, you know, I've been taking a lot of effort in, you know, kind of making sure I get it just right. And then you hear about things like that. And I think this is where it's interesting. We talk about recycling technologies. On one hand, some solutions require that perfectly clean, sorted plastic for manufacturing. And that's really why, you know, when China sort of decided to impose those restrictions, they did that for that reason. But what we're talking about now is saying, right, if we were to open up recycling and reforming technologies like the kinds we've been talking about, it suddenly gives us the opportunity to take, you know, this less than perfect plastic bottle or slightly sort of dirty plastic that we might have in our everyday lives. Let's look at that less than perfect plastic product and think about recycling technologies that don't sort of need those types of standards. Because what we're saying is instead of making a lot of those traditional products like a plastic bottle to another plastic bottle, we can actually convert them to some other types of materials where, in fact, some of that oil in a processing sense may well be seen as a positive, perhaps as a nice lubricant, for instance. So I'm just sort of kind of putting it out there that recycling in a traditional sense, of course, has been happening for a long time. But when those markets start to actually dry out or there's not enough need in that particular market, we need to be ready for a whole range of other markets.
Is there anything Warwick can do with his old plastic motor oil bottles now? Is there anything he can do?
Well, I think one of the things might be worthwhile is to be able to start to find out and certainly contact, the NSW Circular on our website, nswcircular.org, because what we are really trying to do is connect different stakeholders. So where there might be an opportunity with a local manufacturer, somewhere in the state, for instance, we can certainly start to look at our ability to connect people like Warwick who have the pain of these types of materials, but then on the other hand, find out where these manufacturers are. So, for instance, people who are able to utilize these types of plastics and put them into their manufacturing processes. And that's exactly what NSW Circular is all about, is connectivity and collaboration between people who may well be in different parts of the supply chain. They just don't know each other.
Well, Warwick, hopefully that was a bit helpful. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you. Warwick, if you missed it, it's nswcircular.org is that website you might want to check out. Professor Sajwala, it's been wonderful having you in here. Congratulations on the work that you're doing, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the Circular Economy Innovation Network manages to do with, you know, what the Prime Minister's suggesting that we do with our waste.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Pleasure. Professor Veena Sajwala there, she is, well, she basically established the Centre for Sustainable Materials Research and Technology.